Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. This is a Sunday recording, largely because I was flying back from Los Angeles yesterday, but we're here and we're ready to rock and roll. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning, Todd. It's I'm doing great. Boy, it's like Seattle is like got sunshine and warm weather, and when the rest of the country is like socked in with snow. So
that is.
I'm feeling lucky.
Yeah, and you know, everyone else is freezing too. So that's and I can't complain. The weather in California last week was just absolutely incredible. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was on this grand tour of the state. I've seen some places last week I haven't seen in years. So, you know, it's interesting. You go from, you know, if it isn't, it's true though about California, they could almost turn into a desert if they, with no water, and that's what it's kind of looking like in a lot of the states. Kind of sad.
Yeah,
really.
It's certainly heading that way. I think that, you know, it's obvious that the moisture is heading north. So yeah, I don't know. I think that whole Southern California area is a little bit in trouble.
Yeah, but anyway, I had a good week. I'm just kind of like a little bit, I guess for a better word, a little bit unorganized this morning. My wife has a friend here in Hawaii who had a death in the family, and they flew back to Michigan last Monday. And so they needed a house sitter because of their pets. So my wife and kids are in town staying at our friend's house. I'm here going solo. They're coming at 9, and then we're all going to go do some things together. But it's kind of a weird morning, but it's going to be a weird week until they get back on Friday. But I've got. I think we're going to have a guest come in at in an hour. I've got one person from the New Media Expo that's going to be coming in and talking with us about their session and what they're going to be doing. So we'll be talking with them. But for the first hour or so, I think it's just you and I.
Okay, that sounds good.
So
I think we can handle that.
Yeah, I think so too. There's enough going on in the space for sure to be able to, I guess for a better word, ad lib. And we really don't necessarily 100% ad lib. But, you know, I saw that, you have, you sent me an email the other day and it came from a new address that I hadn't seen in a while. So you got your consulting stuff up and running, yeah?
Yeah. It's called Loudvox. Actually, it's a company I've had for a really long time. Actually goes back to the early days of when I started to do online shows and consulting with other companies and creating new shows. It was actually a venture-back funded company that I started back in it was like 2000, and so anyway, I'm kind of bringing it back to life again to help do some consulting in the podcasting space. You know, there's a lot of companies that are jumping into this area right now that don't really understand it, and I'm trying to be a resource to a group of companies, and Podcast One is one of them. So building a little bit of a consultancy, mainly targeted towards kind of larger companies. And so that's what I'm doing. So if you want to, there's not much to see on my website yet, but it's coming. It's at loudvox.com, and that's LODVOX.com.
One thing that we also see, Rob, is a lot of reporters that need help.
Yeah, we've been seeing that a lot. Actually, that's been going on for a couple of months now.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just on and on and on. I just, you know, I see stuff and I just cringe because they are, it's just like someone tells them, hey, go do a podcasting article. And they say, okay. And they don't talk to anybody, at least, or if they talk to people, it's like, where did they get this information? It's amazing. It really is how bad at least one of them was in the past day. I mean, past couple of days. It was horrendous.
You couldn't possibly be talking about the Forbes article that came out saying that that Stitcher is a new entrance to the podcasting space. There you go.
You know, it's just, I mean, I was like, okay, really? And I think this guy's done some podcasting articles in the past. And, it's of course, now it doesn't want to load to see if it'll, okay. No, the link you sent me wasn't the right link, Rob.
Oh, it wasn't? Okay. Sorry.
I was going to bring it up on the page. Yeah, you sent me to the advertising page.
Great.
But it makes you wonder if they're just, you know, they're talking about Serial a lot too. So you know, they're trying to keep the spins, I guess the spin cycle alive, you know, and off of a show that's not even being produced right now. So it is kind of funny. Okay, yeah, I found it here. So it's entitled Podcast Ready for the Big Time Except for One Thing, Revenue. And I read that off the beginning of my, and I'm like, okay, where's the revenue? And there could be more, but there's a lot of revenue going on in the podcasting space.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been steadily growing, right?
Yeah.
There's no real probably huge spike in it or anything like that. It's just steady increase. But this article is just so misinformed of what's happening in the space right now. I mean, it's a long article. I mean, he was writing a lot.
Yeah. You know, and I have to laugh because here I am. I'm living in Hawaii. This is my gig. My podcast income allows me to do what I do. And they're saying there's no revenue.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, they really just go on and on about stuff. And I'm just kind of like, two of the most popular podcasting apps are TuneIn and Stitcher. And I'm like, no, the two most popular podcasting apps aren't TuneIn and Stitcher. Stitcher and the podcast app from iTunes. Maybe two of the most popular, but TuneIn, I don't think they even register off the heartbeat of, you know, I'm like, where do you get that information? So,
yeah. Yeah. TuneIn is not a big, big supporter of podcasts.
No,
that's for sure.
Not at all. And they call them new podcasting apps.
Yeah.
So,
well, they're new to him, I think.
I guess. And of course, the new stuff come out from Edison as well. We can talk a little bit about that as we get into the content today. But and then there was another article that was over on DigiDay that was talking about podcasts are booming, but Google could make them much bigger. That's kind of the theme that I kind of laugh because I'm like, did he read my article then decide to write his own article on this? But it is true. Google is missing. And I don't think Google's going to do anything. I would be shocked if they did.
Yeah, I don't think I'm skeptical as well. I think it's just going to be up to another company to build a big presence.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's going to happen very fast, as part of a third-party app or something. I think Stitcher, is the largest one on Android right now, and that's pretty small percentages.
Yeah, like 3.5% or something like that overall. And they've got an iTunes app too, so I think grand total about 7%. But yeah, like 3.5%, and they are the biggest Android app.
Yeah.
So,
and there's a few other players, you know, like I think Downcast is on there, and so I think if you total up all those players, it becomes a decent number, but it just seems like it's got so much upside.
It doesn't from an Android standpoint.
Really?
No, it's I think Rob Walsh said something that, and I know I think our numbers like say 1 in 6. So what is that? That's 13% maybe is Android or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's better than it was a couple of years ago.
Right. But I think it goes back to, and we've talked about this a lot. The audience members must be sick of it, but we need to make sure that the podcasters are doing their part. That's what it's going to boil down to. We're going to solve this. The big companies aren't.
Well, and the users of Android need to be, asking Google for better support too. I don't know if there's any kind of mechanism for users of Android to give feedback like that, but I know that's the case at a small company called Microsoft. There is ways that you can give feedback to the company about things to offer, but I don't believe that Google has that kind of feedback process.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So it's just one of those deals that I think for now we're gonna basically be solving our own fate, I guess, for a better word. And I think I can't go into details, but I think help is on the way. in that aspect as well. And it won't be too long. I'll be able to make some announcements. And but it is a is a space that's, you know, it's my dedication is, you know, partially this year is to make sure that the Android space grows, and because it's going to be the number one growth area. You know, because let's really think about it for a second. You've got, and if you're a podcaster listening to this, you need to really, really hone in here. Your iTunes audience is established. Okay. That is going to continue to grow at your growth rate of your show, whatever percentage growth rate you have. Okay. Your Android audience right now is, you know, minuscule. So you've got obviously a huge iTunes and a huge Android space that are Android, potential listeners that are out there, but in the scheme of thing, it's much, much greater on the Android side.
Yeah.
The base of Android users is worldwide, you know, incredibly. Now, the United States is not as big of a split between iOS and Android, but worldwide, you know, it is, you know, magnitudes bigger, you know, on a, from an Android, Android operating system standpoint. Yeah. So, you know, the growth potential of growing your Android audience at a faster rate than your, I mean, growing your existing Android audience at a faster rate than your iTunes or your iOS is, yeah, should be self-apparent.
Yeah. And I think all these articles and all the discussion that's happening is going to, has made it clear to a lot of companies. Cause I hear when I talk to them is that they think about Android more. They see Android as the upside in this space. And then cars is kind of the second bullet point that they talk about, you know, the listenership capability in cars. So the combination of Android, and I know Android is working on car programs, and both of these companies are working on, you know, car technology. You know, the whole discussion about Apple's iCar and all this stuff is a fascinating discussion about the kind of the direction that Apple's going to go with this, where they could potentially, and it's not been confirmed, but it certainly seems like all the evidence is pointing to the car that they're, that Apple is working on some sort of a car technology or car itself, to compete with Tesla, because they see the opportunity that Tesla has created, and you know, that could be a profitable area for them in the long run. But also Apple could just be providing all the dash technology to other car manufacturers as well. I mean, if you think about, you know, the Tesla vehicle today is basically a rolling iPad. It's you know, cars are going to become mobile technology gadgets, and they're going to be full of technology that's going to enable podcast consumption too. So, and they're going to become smarter and more capable. And I've been talking about this in articles in Podtertainment for a while, of the podcast discovery is going to change based on context as these devices and platforms become more intelligent and more knowledgeable about you as a user. They're going to be able to make it easier for you to get to the content that you want to listen to wherever you are, in your car or in your home, or, you know, I think we're starting to see that, the very beginning of that. It's just going to be a lot easier. You're just going to be able to say, I want to listen to This American Life, and whatever device happens to be listening to you at the moment, we'll pull it up and start playing it. You know, that's how easy it's going to be, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. But, you know, the iCar thing has me a little bit like, is Apple biting off a little more than they can chew? I just,
they've got $170 billion in the bank.
Well, that's true.
They can chew on a lot.
Yeah, they can. Most of it's offshore though.
That's true.
You know, 120-130 billion of it is, you know, sitting, but I guess you can do a lot with 40 billion sitting in a U.S. bank. you know, but if they're going to repatriate some of that money, they're going to lose 30% of it, or because they're going to have to pay taxes on it. Which,
yeah, I think that there's been a lot of talk that Apple could acquire Tesla. And I've been following this market for a very long time, electric vehicles. And I'm really skeptical that Apple's going to buy Tesla. I just, you know, it just would be so expensive for them to do that. I mean, how many billions would it actually take for Apple to create their own car, right? Maybe 10, 5? But there's speculation that Apple might buy Tesla for $75 billion.
Yeah, that's just a weird Rob. I mean, sorry, that to me is just a weird.
Yeah,
that's a weird buy. I don't fully. It to me, it's if it happens, I'll eat some crow here. But I just can't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. It's just way too much cash. You know, and there's no reason why Apple can't duplicate what Tesla's done.
Well, if Apple wants to fix things, they need their own TV. You know, they've been talking about this for years. Just put a TV out. You know, that's number one. You want to stay with your core, stay with the media. You know, with the media space.
Yeah, but Todd, I mean, you have to think about it. I mean, are TVs even going to be viable in the future? I mean, is it even a market that they need to even be thinking about? It's more screen size, right?
Yeah, I still think people like their big screens.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that to think of it as a television, I guess, is what I'm saying. Is it's just going to be a big screen monitor?
Oh,
right?
Well, of
I mean,
course. But
all the stuff is going IP.
Oh yeah. When I say TV, it's a monitor with an operating system attached to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I'm not talking about it. You know, no. But it has all those. That's what we have already. You know, that's what's going into. You know, that's what's being attempted by. You know, Samsung and the other folks, and they're, you know, Samsung, I just wish they would get off the boat and put Google TV in. They're trying to, you know, own their own OS, and it's just, it's a nightmare to navigate through their, you know, to get apps in their system is painful.
Yeah, I think that's a temporary thing. I think Android and the Apple operating system is going to become the de facto standard in everything. You know, Windows is going to have a place in this whole ecosystem, but it's probably not going to be in TVs and cars. So,
Well, I see the Xbox team. It looks like they've woke up a little bit, and they're going to be allowing people to now start developing easier into their API. Now, whether or not you can develop and then get the actual product in there is a big question, but do you think the Xbox team has said, oh man, we've screwed up. We need to hurry up and catch up.
Well, I think that the discussion of Microsoft and Windows and Xbox is a much bigger conversation now because they're working on a universal app store. So it will be one app store for every screen that's running Windows. So, you know, Xbox just happens to be another device that's connected to a screen. So there's been a lot of talk about making apps run on the Xbox. Now, granted, you know, there's a lot of experts in the Microsoft area that have commented that Xbox will probably continue to have a distinctive flair to apps because it may not be appropriate for any app to run on Xbox, but it may be a lot more open and a lot more inexpensive to develop for. But there may be a continued kind of filter against certain kind of apps going into the Xbox.
Well, I think the challenge will be then is getting the developers who have been creating the millions of, you know, iPhone apps to understand that, you know, there is a large segment of the population that don't own a Apple product. Mm-hmm. And they more than likely have a Windows machine sitting on their desk. And I know that Apple's making inroads in there. But still, the majority of people and majority of businesses have Microsoft machines purely from a cost perspective. Yep. And they're working in the cloud and they're going to be migrating to Windows 10. Windows 8 obviously was a failure, but Windows 10 probably will be where a lot of businesses migrate.
So, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So if you don't get them on the mobile device, you get them on the desktop, you know? So, you know, a lot of us spend a lot of hours in front of the desktop. I know I do. I probably spend, you know, looking at this screen. I probably spend 8 to 10 hours a day looking at this screen.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't give the credit that, of how good Windows 8.1 really is at its core. Sure, there's usability issues and I totally agree with that. But I think Windows 10 makes that next step of getting it back to what people are more used to. And I do believe that a lot of Windows 7 users are going to move to Windows 10. Because it's really what Windows 8 should have been to begin with is a slight adjustment to the desktop experience, not a complete shift over to a tablet experience.
Yep.
So, and I think that the team there realizes that. Of course, we all have to realize that the team that's now running Windows now is the same team that built Windows Phone. And really, I mean, I spent many years at the company, and I would say that the Windows Phone team, and I've told this team that too, and I felt this way for a while, was actually leading the evolution of Windows. I'm talking about Windows Phone. And really what was learned in Windows Phone is now being applied to the desktop side.
Right.
And I think that those platforms are coming together into one platform. So the same operating system, Windows 10, is going to be running on the phone or on small tablets or on larger screen devices as well. It's going to be the same operating system, even in Xbox. So this is something that I know Apple would probably like to be able to figure out too. So in a lot of ways, I think Microsoft deserves some credit for thinking ahead a little bit. How they actually deploy this is really, I think, the big question, right? What's the experience going to be across all these different screen sizes? Can they manage that, right, where people understand how it works? I think that's their biggest challenge.
Last week, this is what I took with me on my trip. I took this Dell XPS.
Yeah.
And you can see right now, even when I booted it last night and did a couple of things transferring onto the network here, I'm in the desktop mode. You know, very seldom was I in, you know, in the tiles. I spent most of my time, you know, right in the desktop working. So while the tiles are handy, it's still, you know, and the thing that really aggravated me was the Facebook app, which is on here, it wasn't easy. You know, it was not as good an experience as being just being on the website.
Yeah,
so
exactly. It doesn't have all the features. Yeah.
So until they make that seamless, so until it looks and feels the same and have all the features.
Yeah.
That's where the challenge lies.
Yeah, I don't think there's really any reason to be on that new start screen. I mean you can pin all the apps that you want to your taskbar on your desktop. And that's exactly the direction that the company's going now. Floating windows of the new Windows 8 apps are going to be on the desktop.
Right.
So you're not going to have to go full screen apps anymore. You're right. It's going to be more like what people are used to on the whole desktop. The start button's going to pop up a menu just like what people want.
Yep.
It's still going to have those tiles in there, which is fine. It just makes things more usable and how people like to use it. I know I'm on the desktop all the time myself. You know, I've got multiple Windows computers. But anyway, that's not podcasting.
That's right. But it does lead to, you know, people using their desktops a lot and listening to podcasts. So don't forget that there's still a lot of people are listening right on the web page.
Yep. And to kind of dovetail this into podcasting, Microsoft does have a podcasting app that's part of Windows Phone that's a default app, kind of like what Apple has done. Though it's not a robust app, they do have a podcasting app. And when they go to a unified app store, that app will likely be across all the Windows screens. So in kind of a backwards way, Microsoft is going to have a podcast app that goes across all their devices, and it may even be an Xbox.
Well, if they do it so it's easy to subscribe to.
Yeah, which it isn't currently, but
if they fix that, then it'll be much better, I guess, for a better word, much better experience.
Yep.
So, you know, I know we've been talking, you know, a lot about Android and the actual operating systems and listeners, and I think that the podcasters probably and the folks listening fully understand. You know, it's just up to us, and we need to make sure that we make our content as accessible as possible across all these platforms. And, you know, it's and have exposure, have your own website, you know, build your own brand. So when someone is searching for your content, you know, that's another thing too. A lot of podcasters don't even pay attention to. They don't take advantage. They got this great content, yet they're not helping themselves in the, I guess, the meta universe and, you know, for discoverability. And I've said many, many times, a large portion of my show growth comes from people that are searching for topics. They come to my website and see a blog post, and right there, live and center on my website as a big subscribe bar of the podcast. So if I interested them to read the blog post, they may be interested enough just to subscribe. And, you know, it's right there, you know, right on the website. You can, you come there, you read an article, what's this podcast thing? And, oh, let me go ahead and subscribe, you know, and it's easy for them to do so. And we just, you know, we have to continue to make it easy for podcasters. And the same thing with the new media show. It's, it's basically laid out the same way. And they can, you know, they can subscribe fast and mobile ready, responsive design. I think that was probably my best investment is making the site mobile ready.
That's important to do. That's for sure. Hey, Todd, I also noticed that the Pottertainment magazine came out for this month.
Oh, it did. I haven't looked at it yet. Anything in there that grabbed your attention?
Actually, I just saw it this morning, so I haven't had a chance to look through all the articles. But I think you had an article in there, I believe, the Grow Your Audience with Android.
Yeah,
I think is what you covered in there. And I had an article in there, business models that work and some that don't. And that definitely applies to the podcasting space.
And it, you know, and it's when I did laugh is that all of a sudden these articles coming about Android. I'm like, did they read the Pottertainment magazine?
Yeah. Well, it just came out. So
maybe not. Maybe I'll be the one to be accused of copying someone. But no, I wrote that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I wonder how many, you know, those of you that are listening to the show, are you guys subscribed to that magazine, Pottertainment? If you aren't, you ought to. There's lots of good stuff in there. It's put together by Gary Leland, and I think it's still only iOS. Yeah, it's not for Android yet, is it?
Yeah, it's only on iOS. I mean, Todd, if you wanted to pull it up on the screen here and play his video for episode 12, that might be an interesting thing for people to see.
Yeah, let's see here. I got to be careful because of the rules of engagement here.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Let me look.
He plays through, I think, Vimeo, I believe.
Let's see here. I don't know if I can patch the audio. I don't think I have that hooked up.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
But it's easy enough. Maybe not, but let me bring it up on the screen.
Yeah, it's not coming through there.
It's not coming through.
Well, it is a little bit.
And it's too weak. Sorry, guys. I just didn't plan on playing a video today. But so, so he does a video intro for each of these, So this month, let's see here. Let me go through and I can read this while we're sitting here. By the way, the guy that's coming at the top of the hour says he's not. So maybe we'll only go an hour today.
Oh, okay.
He just sent me an email and said, sorry, I had something come up. Okay, so Dave Jackson writes about Yoda as a podcast master. Rob Walsh talks about, does increasing a bit rate equal more audience? Of course, I talk about Grow Your Audience with Android. Jessica Cooperman, 16 great web tools. Brian Ivett says, retiring the term pod safe. Funny. Ken Tron is back with a review of Samson Meter Mic. Travis Littig writes about On Location interviews. Jeffrey Powers talks about defending yourself. Rod Greenley returns with business models that work and some that don't. And, but anyway, it's $12.99 a year. And, there's a lot of good stuff in here, each month. And, Gary hasn't said how the subscriptions are doing, but I always end up a couple weeks after the article's out, I cross post, my article to podcasternews.com.
Yeah, so, I've been doing that too. I've been putting that on my blog at robgreenlee.com. So if you want to see, you know, kind of a flavor of what these articles look like from me and Todd, go read them online where they're free.
So this weekend, PodCamp Toronto is going on. So I didn't realize that a lot of PodCamps were still going, but that one, it's still alive and well. So some folks are there this weekend for that. And then some stuff that's going on around Podcaster News. One of our writers, Jen Thorpe, she's been doing interviews with women podcasters. Every month she has an interview that's been being put up. So she's been focusing on the ladies. I think it's good that she continues to give them great exposure to different things that are going on in the space.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of women jumping into the space, I have to say. It's good to see. You know, yeah. I know it's something we've been talking about for a long time.
So, anyway, how's your, you know, you went down to L.A. Any revelations from what was going on down there? Can you say?
Oh, no, I went to San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco.
Yep. So I was down there visiting a few companies down there, talking about the podcasting space. And
so what are you finding then? You know, I know you can't tell who, but what's the general discussion points that people or companies are saying?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, there's this constant conversation about metrics, I think, is definitely a common thread across the whole industry right now. And I think everybody's really kind of focused on what's going on with the IAB, and many in the industry feel that that's key to really growing this space, is to get that settled and get that figured out. I think there's as we've seen in the articles, I think there's still a lot of misinformation about podcasting's viability as an economic engine. So I think that one of the functions of this IAB group should be to consolidate industry information, and there needs to be a concerted effort to get accurate information out about how big the space is, what's going on in the space, you know, what the advertising activity is. And the only way that that's really going to happen is if all the companies cooperate with each other and share information about what's happening in the space. And that may be difficult to do because it's such a stray cat, kind of a thing where everybody's off doing their own thing and not a lot of people talk to each other.
But I think at the same time during the IAB meetings, we have been talking about, they basically hiring a third party auditing firm, and yep, they're going to, basically take, all the majors will send in their data. We said we would be more than happy to send in.
That's right.
Revenue and podcast statistics. Matter of fact, we've already shared a bunch of what I would consider be proprietary data to IAB. We've backfilled them on what we're seeing in the space.
Yep.
I think most of the companies are willing to do so. They just got to get it compiled.
That's right. And also make sure that there's enough people that are included in that process too. I think that there's a lot of companies that don't even know the IAB has a podcasting working group. Each company that I talk to or a new person that I meet, I'm trying to share that information and tell them about the various conferences. And I'm finding that, fairly significant players in this space just don't even know about these things.
That tells me that they're not major players if they're out of touch. How can they be that far out of touch, Rob?
They're newer entrants to the space that are maybe coming from radio or coming from other segments that just haven't been around the space long enough to have heard about it. And they're jumping in, coming from streaming music, or they're coming in from, and most of those companies just monitor what's going on in Streaming Media Magazine or Streaming Media West and East, and that's their focus, right? And if they're jumping into podcasting and supporting that, they tend to have these kind of generalized kind of assumptions about the space just based on old information, and they're just not up to speed. And that's one thing that I think both you and I are in the middle of right now, is trying to, loop in all these people as much as I can. I'm constantly trying to reach out to new people in the space. And I think a really good and fascinating development that happened this past week is the hiring by Midroll of Chris Bannon, who was as their chief content officer, coming from WNYC, And I think that's an interesting move on the part of Midroll to get a public radio person, because they haven't really been in the public radio side, but I can see that they're starting to think of that, you know, maybe trying to make that a little bit of that transition, because they see how popular public radio formatted programming is in the podcasting space. And from a strategic move, it definitely looks like an interesting one. I don't know. Yeah, did you follow it or not so much because you were traveling so much?
Yeah, I was out of the loop this week. I didn't see that. But, you know, here's the challenge with the public radio folks are, well, I have to be careful what I say here.
Well, it's more of a format question.
Well, you know? Okay. But yeah. They're also, you know, they're also looking at opportunities.
Yeah.
As a collective, the public radio folks are looking at opportunities as a collective. Now, them hiring, with Midroll hiring that guy, then it's obvious that Midroll wants to try to sell advertising into public radio. And that's it's a different animal.
Well, and creating
into the podcast.
Public radio content.
Oh.
I think that's who this fellow is. I mean, he's the one that's behind, you know, like Freakonomics and kind of pushing that out there,
right.
and really kind of driving what the content mix looks like for WNYC.
I see.
So he's more of a programming guy.
I gotcha.
So as you think about that, you know, and kind of Midroll's been living in the content and ad sales part. Actually,
yep.
Midroll is very similar to Podcast One and how they look at the space. They're a sales organization, and then they're a content creation company.
I think we both know the challenges with the content creation side, though.
It is. I mean, it is a challenge, but that's where the value is added, right? I mean, if you can have a portfolio of successful shows, then you have exclusive sales rights to
right,
those.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the ad sales rep companies out there are not necessarily exclusive
right.
to represent any particular program, and that is not necessarily a great situation to be in.
Well, the reason that it's like that is because podcasters in large part got screwed over and were told lies by many sales groups. Well, we're going to do this for you. And they never did. So most podcasters are not willing to sell their souls to a single company.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are some that will, but most don't.
Yeah.
You know? And why give someone, you know, most of these companies take 50%. So if a show's big enough, why would they give a company 50% of their ad revenue when they can probably do it themselves if they get to a certain stage?
Well, I think that the only way you can really justify that kind of percentage is if the partner that you have is a 360 partner, right, that basically takes care of everything for you. And I know a lot of shows want that. I mean, a lot of the big celebrity
right,
shows,
right.
they want to work with a company that's 360 and taking care of all aspects of the success of their program. All they do is walk in, record the show, and walk out, and maybe send a few tweets and it could be
a
few guests, and that's about all they do.
And it could be too that Midroll's finding out that they have this ridiculous requirement of a minimum 50,000 downloads per episode. They're finding out that those shows are few and far between. You know, let's be quite frank.
Yeah, I mean, it is that is a difficult bar to hit. I mean,
right.
even for a big celebrity to
right.
hit right out of the gate.
Yeah.
I mean, it can take a while, and oftentimes a lot of these companies don't have a lot of patience with
right.
this too, because it is expensive to get one of these shows launched. And I guess it gets back to support level, right? Can even a network drive enough attention to a particular program to make it successful? It's a big question. It's something that, you know, I struggle with at Podcast One, and I know that I'm sure Midroll struggles with this, you know, with their content networks that they have, as well as being able to drive enough focus to all their shows to drive enough attention, enough marketing to every show that they have. So let's say you've got 25 or 30 shows that are originally produced by a particular network. How do you effectively spend your resources to build all those shows at the same time?
I am so glad I don't have to worry about that.
I mean, it's possible, you know, the TV networks have been doing it for years through
yeah.
cross promotion
yeah.
and
yeah.
cross guesting and those kind of things. And those are all techniques that are done by all the big networks. And it's a proven strategy that's been done in television for years and even radio. So there's no reason why it can't work here. So in some ways, the building a big stable of big shows has a synergistic effect that can help you launch other shows. But one of the content networks that learned this the hard way early on was Smodcast. They built some big shows, and then they added a lot of shows really fast, right? And what they wound up doing is they wound up fragmenting their big shows because their audience got split up across a larger group of shows, and they didn't really have any net gain in audience. It was just increasing their costs because they were spending money to produce more programs and reaching the same audience.
Right.
So there is kind of a scale loss that happens at scale on the content production side. So I think it's a walking a fine line. I know some networks tend to focus on a particular vertical, you know, like Leo Laporte focuses on tech
but even Leo,
there's a danger in that.
But even Leo kills programs quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're spending a lot on talent and you're spending a lot on production time, you have production teams behind those shows. Yeah. You have to make decisions quickly. It can, if you have another show that's in the pipeline that has greater potential, push that other one aside. I mean, there's only so much resources that exist in any content production company. You can't just keep hiring producers and producers forever if all those shows are not producing any revenue.
Well, one thing's for sure, for those of you that are independent out there listening to this, just thank your lucky stars you're not in this quagmire, because it's the ownership issues, I'm still pretty happy with the model I work under. I really am. I can't imagine having to deal with that all the time. I'm dealing with, owning shows, and I think independent content creators work best as independent content creators, but there is you do give something up, maybe, give up of as much, gain in audience size over a short period of time, but I don't know. I wish them luck. If they can build a bunch of successful shows and spread their base, but what's going to, are they going to be in the same situation that Smodcast is going to be in? I think the podcasting space is just so different. I don't think all business rules that what worked in one segment was going to work in another. I don't think, or what worked in TV is not necessarily going to work, what's going to work in radio. Because if you think about radio, what do you have in radio? You've got, in talk radio, you have some big names. You've got Rush, Hannity, Beck. You've got Laura Ingram. You have, there's like 20 or 30 really big talk radio folks. And they're syndicated nationwide. And then in local markets, you have some local guys that do good in morning drive time. So the majority of the country that's listening to talk radio listen to the 20 or 30 of those shows. Mm-hmm. Now, what's going to happen in the podcasting space? Are you going to have the majority of podcast listeners listening to 20 or 30 podcasts? I don't think that's the case.
Todd, I think it's your example is exactly correct from the standpoint that if you think about success in podcasting is more of a parallel to nationally syndicated radio.
Yeah.
The shows or the syndicated radio show hosts that are nationally syndicated tend to have successful podcasts. The ones that are local tend to not have successful podcasts, because they're not reaching that national audience, which podcasting is today. So that list that you just listed is a good example. I mean, sure, there's like Clark Howard,
There's the sports side, and
And there's Rich Eisen, and there's some guys that are cross media too. They're doing TV, they're doing radio, they're doing podcasting, all that stuff. And those guys are doing well too, but those guys all came out of being kind of national personalities. They're on television, they're doing all that kind of stuff. But the whole local part is what's missing from this, and that's where radio is going to get left behind.
Well, one thing too to think about too, if you think about podcasts, number one, we're national, or actually worldwide to start. So
global medium, yeah.
Global medium. So you're going to have, obviously, there is going to be a segment of audiences that are going to be, there's going to be the shows that are going to break out and they're going to do well. And those shows, largely to this point, have been focused around people that already had national personalities.
Yep.
So that's just kind of a natural thing. It because they had a name, they had exposure, they had national name recognition already. You say Adam Carolla, I don't think there's anybody in the country that wouldn't know who Adam Carolla is. You know, there may be a few.
I've met a couple. Yeah.
Okay, but like, the majority of the country, let's say 80%, are going to know.
They're usually younger people. Yeah.
But anyway, okay, but anyway, so it's same thing goes with some of these national talk show hosts. You say their name, people, oh yeah, I've heard that guy's name before. Now, okay, so you go to Florida and you say Todd Cochran to someone's got a tech show. They're going, who the hell's that? And you know, I could care less because he doesn't have national recognition, but the show has been able, my show has been able to be built into very successful. I have a very large audience. But that was through hard work and, you know, that was putting the time in and doing the marketing and, you know, building an audience and doing everything you needed to do to do that. Now, not every podcaster is as successful, but at the same time, I still feel that the shows that are smaller, that let's say 5,000 listeners or less, are the mainstay that make up 90, 95, maybe 90% of the podcasting space. But there's, you know, exponentially huge number of those types of shows that are reaching great niche audiences. And I think that continues to be the beauty of this medium. Now, does it help the monetization? Not for the big companies. The big companies can't, haven't figured out or won't or don't want to deal with the small shows. But there will come a time when the big companies are going to figure out there's just not enough money to grow my business. I'm going to have to start looking at these smaller shows and start giving them their due. And advertisers probably will as well. That is yet to be seen because I still get RFPs all the time. I only want audiences to have at least 5,000 people per episode, blah, 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 blah. That will change over time. But I think if any podcasters out there, the goal is to get to 5K. That's a big, that should be a big goal point for most folks per episode. You can get there, then it's like you step into the next level. But at the same point, I don't discount any, the smaller shows. I've always, from an advertising standpoint, have had better performance than the big shows. It's because of the relationship those guys have with their audiences. It's tighter. You know, they probably know 50% of their audience by name. From emails that they get and comments on blogs and Twitter posts and that kind of stuff. I wish these guys, they're going to spend a lot of time and money trying to build big shows, and good luck. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. It's definitely a challenge. But I guess based on the comments you just made, Todd, it does raise a challenge, right? How do we get the long tail to get purchased by advertisers? I mean, what's the methodology? I know you've built some technology enable that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. They had been up until a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was all they bought. That was all there was. And we had hundreds of thousands of dollars going out every month to small shows.
But why has that changed?
Why has it changed? It's because the media buyers have bought into the spin cycle and tried to take more control of the ad campaigns and wanting bigger shows. They're trying to, they've got ever-increasing budgets and they want to, spend, bigger number of dollars and bigger Frontline main name shows. Okay. You're an ad buyer and you go into the boss and say, tell your boss, I just signed 500 small podcasts for a campaign. And the boss is going to say, well, who's some of the shows? Well, I've got show ABC, I got show DEF, and I got show FG. And the boss is going to look at you, I've never heard of any of those shows.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Who are these folks? And the bosses are typically older. So then the media buyer goes with their, thinking they did a great thing. They go with their tail between their legs. They go back to their desk and they call and say, I want Adam Carolla. Well, you can't get an Adam Carolla. It's sold out. It's X thousands of dollars per episode and you only get a 15 second spot. And then all these constrictions come on. And so what ends up happening, and I'm not saying that's the case, I'm just using it as an example. So let's use any big show as a better example. They're not going to get the same type of campaign that they're going to get with someone like me, who's going to give them a very good package and consecutive shows one after the other that drives incredible ROI. They're going to get a good ROI with the other group, good enough to make the boss happy. Plus she can go into the boss and say, I have this, this celebrity is going to be running our stuff. And that to the boss goes, oh my God, we can press release. We've got, Johnny Come Lately, national syndication of such and such. He's running our advertising campaign. And for them, it's more about
prestige
and bragging rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the performance is not so okay. So then you get in a different dynamic too. Well, let's say the campaign didn't do so good. Well, he didn't do so good, but he's still Johnny Come Lately. We still have that name as promoting our brand. We can use that in another spin. So they're willing to take less performance on the advertising campaign because they have the name associated with the brand.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. Sure.
So, that's the sell. It's a hard sell right now. This is what, and a lot of the people that are buying advertising in the space right now are looking for a name, and bigger shows. So will it come back? Well, it'll come back. We have to see. And also part of the reason too is I'm walking away from campaigns. When the advertiser calls me and says, I've got a campaign for you. And I'm like, okay, what's the CPM going to be? And they say $6. I'm like, sorry, we don't do $6. That doesn't work. It's an insult. It's that go buy YouTube at $6 or $10 or whatever it is. No, we're not taking, that CPM level is because they're able to buy bigger shows. They're not getting as high a performance. So what do? They lower the CPM down.
Yeah.
So in a sense, the celebrities have, for a better word, fucked us.
I don't know if there's a better word for it, Todd. or have they done that to themselves? I guess.
Well, maybe.
Another question. Yeah.
I will not say the names, but I've done some deals with some big shows, and they are hard to work with. They say, nope, we're not doing this. Nope, we're not doing that. Nope, we're not doing this. And you're like, no. This is a proven formula. I need you to do this. I need you to do that. I need you to do this. They say, no. I go back to the media buyer and I tell them, they don't want to do that. The media buyer is so desperate to get them on a buy, they'll sacrifice those components of an advertising campaign that we know are critical in order to get the big name. It's crazy.
So do you think that it would be easier to bundle a big name and a bunch of other shows together?
That's what we used to do. We used to do that a lot. I like to do that the best. Yeah. But I want the big name to follow the same rules as the small shows.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you have a lot of advertiser, bids into that show, it changes the dynamic. Right.
Right.
Because then it's like, highest bidder scenario.
Yeah.
Or it goes the other way where the prices don't go up, but the requirements increase or the limitations increase.
Yeah. Well, but I still can't do $6, you know. Yeah. I'm going to go back. They're going to be like, why do that? That's, you know, most podcasts, it's not even worth it. You know, that's that. And when you have a smaller show, $6 doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, that's the key. And now they're going to go, okay, I've got 5,000 listeners. So you're going to pay me $30 for an ad spot. Yeah. You know, no, it's not happening. Or if they have a small audience, you know, they have 5,000 people that's listening to the show and it's 25. It's $125 spread across 8 shows. That's, you know, it's about $1,000 a month. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's do that.
Yeah.
You know?
So there is an inverse relationship between size of show and needed CPM, right?
Well, and
so,
it's not only that, but I've proven that the higher CPM rates work on the smaller shows because of the higher response rate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's the key. If you have actual evidence that there is an inverse relationship there and that the smaller shows deserve a higher CPM. Yep. Because of that conversion rate, then you can.
But when they go back and they, but you know, the problem is that they go back then and they tell their boss, "Well, how come I'm getting a big name celebrity for $6, and I have to pay $20 or $25 to get these small shows?"
Yeah.
So it works. Yeah, it works against them from a, you know, a decision point within the company. They say, "Well, just take that inventory that you're going to give to those smaller shows and give it to the big show."
Yeah, at $6 CPM.
Right.
It reaches more audience, but then that's more of a branding strategy than it is a direct response strategy, though.
Well, you know, again, it's the direct response is still, I'm telling you, the direct response folks, if the ROI is not super great, they will renew just to keep the name. And sometimes, and here's another thing, pride gets in the way. The company says, oh man, we just spent $25,000 with them, but their response wasn't so good. If we don't renew, does that make us look bad that people didn't like our product? So let's just go ahead and spend more money. So sometimes they spend good money after bad.
Well, and I've heard where the advertiser blames the program for not having enough ROI, where it's really the ad message and the product itself.
Sometimes that's true too.
Yeah.
It goes back to the execution of did the podcaster follow all the media execution stages that are required? I'm tough when I do deals. And I've got like 11 things that they have to sign saying, I agree to, and that they have to, you know, that I'm making sure that, you know, I dot my I's and cross my T's to make sure that they understand this is exactly what is expected. And, you know, it's based on 10 years of doing advertising campaigns.
Yeah, Todd's School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah. You know, and because the last thing I want to do is pull a show mid campaign. And thank God I only had to do it 4 or 5 times in 10 years. But when I have to call a guy and say, you're off. And well, why? Because, you know, you didn't do step. And it's not complicated. It's very matter of fact type stuff. It's not a, you know, what's a good ask? What are 3 things that are success to Todd's campaigns? A good host endorsement spot in the actual show, in the top 25% of the show, a good one. And I don't put time limits on my ads. Even though I want 60 seconds, it has to be. No, it's as long as it needs to be to get the point across. That's the key. And some people say, well, that's, you're giving them too much. No, if I want to reach ROI and I need to do a spot and I need to talk for 90 seconds about it, as long as it's entertaining, insightful, not repetitive, get the spot across. That's number one. Number two, got to be a banner ad on the website above the fold. Number three, it's got to be a link in the show notes with a trackable hyperlink. That's the 3 components of my success to doing ad campaigns. And why? They hear it, they see it, they read it. You know, so
and they can take action on it.
Right, on all 3.
Yeah.
They don't have to remember, go to acmecompany.com/podcast. That can slip their mind. They come to my website, And this is way important. Again, you got to have your own website where you put your own branding on it, put your own advertising on it, designed to have advertising on it, and Acme Company's banners there. Oh, yeah, Todd talked about the Acme Widget Company. Let me click that button. Boom. Tracked. And tied into a promo code. Sometimes companies aren't set up. They don't like it. Well, my system doesn't handle a promo code. You know, that drives me insane too. So sometimes the back end of a company that you're doing an ad deal isn't 100% aligned to do the deal as well. You know, if you can, many times it's better to click the banner to go to their website because that's gets them into a old class of usability system that they've had in place for years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and sometimes, you know, the biggest complaints I hear from the big shows, the ad's too long. I don't want to put banners on my website. I don't want to put or the guy doesn't even have show notes and doesn't want to put a sponsor link in the show notes. And I tell him it's no track. Put a no track on it. You know, it's an ad spot. So just, you know, follow Google guidelines and put a no track so that it's not going to affect your indexing of your website.
Yeah, your Google ranking.
Right. Sure. You know, and actually when we provide banners, we put no track in there as well so that, you know, people aren't impacted. It's not a complicated process from an execution standpoint if the podcaster follows the instructions. And the bigger problem is, and I had a podcaster the other day who turned down an incredible deal. He said, I only do post roles. I only do post advertising. I'm like, what? I only do post. And he turned, I mean, Rob. The guy walked away from a 5-digit campaign because he only wanted to do the ad at the very end of the show. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, coming from advertising, podcasting platforms, you know, Podcast One, whatever, post rolls don't work.
No, it's just, you know, hey, folks, goodbye. Yeah. And by the way, there's a message from our sponsor. People are like, click, they stop. You know, they're done. They're out of there.
Yep, exactly.
So, you know, I think the key too is, and something we don't talk about very often is the, you know, podcasters have to look to diversify the way they make money. And it's audience support, product merchandising. You know, there's dozens of different ways that you can do this. Are you going to get rich on that? Maybe not. But it may pay some bills and at least keep you motivated to keep doing your show.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was the theme of my article in the Pottertainment magazine this month is business models that work and ones that don't.
Right.
So, I was speaking more in terms of company-wide business models, you know, platform models and things like that versus individual shows. But a lot of the same principles apply to, and I mean, I think you have to have multiple revenue streams. You can't just rely on one revenue stream for your podcast or your company. I think you have to have multiple ones. And that takes some creativity. It takes some thought. That takes understanding who your audience is. It takes going after advertisers that are compatible with your audience.
Yeah.
That you know, just like you're talking about, that you can get ROI on.
Yeah.
And that will potentially drive your CPMs up if you can prove that. And I think that's the challenge that the industry has is certain genres of podcast content will drive good ROI depending on how good the host is in connecting with his audience and how engaging that show is in pulling in the audience into that program as well. So there's a lot of factors that go into this, and it's, you know, it's more than just creating good content.
You know, several years ago, I quit drinking. Well, I do every once in a while still, so I can't say I completely quit, but for at least the first 600 or 700 shows or episodes, I would drink a Red Bull prior to the episode. And because that was, you know, how we coming in, it's 8 o'clock at night. I'm getting ready to record the show. Need a little energy boost to take me through the end of the show. And I always used to laugh about it, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, man, Red Bull would be a great sponsor for my show. You know, and you know, Red Bull is usually associated with motorcycles jumping off of cliffs and flipping cars and, you know, doing all kinds of exciting stuff. You don't think about Red Bull as being a product that would be associated with a podcaster, but I bet you would be surprised how many podcasters are drinking energy drinks before their show. Or, you know, and a lot of people drink Red Bull or other types of energy drinks. It would have been a perfect sponsor for my show, but it didn't completely align, and it was not, you know, Red Bull definitely didn't have that type of, you know, some dude sitting in front of a microphone promoting Red Bull is not their idea of excitement, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So sometimes the brand align, what I thought would be really cool to have, they'd be like, no, some dude, no, it's not happening. So, but, you know, there's lots of opportunities. And
yeah, it seems like, Todd, that the whole podcast conference area seems to be heating up in activity and things going on. You know, I know that the podcast movement folks have been making a lot of efforts around launching a podcast awards and a Hall of Fame and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, then the New Media Expo is coming up here in April, and the what the podcast movement is in at the end of July back in Texas. It seems to have picked up some really good speakers, and you know, maybe that event's got some legs to it. We were questioning whether or not it did, and it appears that it may just be, you know, an important conference here coming up this year.
Well, they they're definitely executing a and I think what there is they're just singularly focused on podcasting. So you know, that probably helps them a little bit from that aspect as well.
Yeah.
You know, with the NMX, of course, and we definitely still want people to come out to New Media Expo.
Yeah, we do.
In April. Yeah. You know, you've got a bigger base there. You have a bigger base of you've got bloggers, you've got YouTubers, you've got, and the thing is, we got to not necessarily think about just our ecosystem. We have to think about you know, there's bloggers, there's podcasters, there's web TV and video. So, you know, that show has got a little bigger, wider spread in personality types.
Well, now it's going to be broadcasters that are going to be in the mix.
Right.
Which really weren't too much before. I mean, as I think back to the New Media Expo, very few major broadcasters even went to that event.
Right.
So now you're going to have, you know, all the major broadcasters are probably going to be at NAB.
Because it's located at the NAB show. So you've got NMX co-located with NAB. And that dynamic alone is worth the price of entry and going to that event. It's going to be a don't-miss event. Well, at the same time, you know, got to give the podcast movement folks credit for having a podcast-focused only event. And they are now just taking speaker submissions. So that just started, Rob, from Podcast Movement. I think they've announced 3 or 4 keynoters already. I still think that's an area that they could use some improvement, but
their keynoters, you mean?
Yeah. So it's better than last year. And so just definitely. You know, baby steps on that aspect.
Yeah. They've gotten some good ones booked, I think. They get some a little closer to that, I think, is, you know, what we were recommending to them back then. I think that they're definitely making some positive strides in that direction.
Yeah, they've split the difference between the affiliate marketing / entrepreneur crowd and actual content creators too. So I shouldn't. No, let me rephrase that. That didn't come out right. they've done a split between the marketing segment, the marketing podcasters, and the non-marketing podcasters. Let me put it that way. That's the better way to say it.
They're thinking of it more, more inclusive. I think that they're definitely driving more focus on public media, public radio content, which I...
Who is the Podcast Movement folks?
Podcast Movement, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, by who their keynoters are, I think it's going to attract that public radio genre, right? Which is oftentimes been missing from the New Media Expo as well.
Yeah.
You know,
Sarah was a major coup for them, getting her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Sarah Koenig, who is behind Serial.
Yeah.
That was a good, that's a good keynote catch for them.
Yeah. It was.
She's a hot one right now in the podcasting space.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what round two that they come up with, whatever they, I don't know. Have they made any announcements? I don't think so. Have they?
I haven't seen anything at this point, but
go ahead.
I mean, it's just almost like every day there's a new article coming out in major magazines and publications about the podcasting space, that it's an up and coming area. It's exploding. I'm hearing all of these terms about exploding and rapidly growing. And it's, of course, that's the spin. That,
let's let them keep using it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's all good.
So I think it's going to be two great events. I think, you know, from my perspective, you're going to have, I really think it's, I just don't think you can miss New Media Expo as well. I think if, you know, if you've got the budget to go to both, the Media Expo is going to be in such a wide base.
Yeah.
And with the NAB thing, I think it'd be an eye opener. If nothing else, it'll give some perspective to where we could be with this space in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to discount that at all on New Media Expo. I think it's going to be a good experience for folks to go to. And plus, it's a bit of a family reunion. Now, I think the Podcast Movement folks are trying to definitely get that vibe as well. I know that was Gary's goal. So, you know, it's going to be good. I think both, I'm excited to go to both events.
Yeah, no, I think that that's the message to take away from this is that I think if you're heavily involved in the podcasting space and your business is primary to that and you're a podcaster, I would consider going to both events. So I think it would be well worth it to go to both. I think in the bigger picture of things, if this industry moves forward, I think it's good to have two events like that. You know, the New Media Expo, I believe, is focused on kind of the convergence with broadcast, and then Podcast Movement is focused on just podcasting and on-demand audio. And I think having those two kind of out there, I think, covers the space really well.
And of course, you know, I think there's a little bit of competing interests here with the awards thing. My baby's still the podcast awards. And, yep. So, you know, Rick and the team are progressing over there with that. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great event who they've got for, basically as the MC. And I think they're going to do a great job with the event. Of course, the Slate announcement is happening now Sunday, March 1st at 9 PM. So I have had no involvement in the Slate review at all. I mean, absolutely none. So, they are, basically going to be ready to announce the Slate on March 1st. And I would imagine voting will start very shortly thereafter. So, I have really no idea where they're at in the process, except I know that they're, you know, going through the nominations at this point. And I know how big of a job that is. I don't know if they realize it, but they do now.
Yeah. So I think last week I announced that we were going to have Bob Heil on
the
show today. And he had to cancel due to doing something important with his wife. So we'll try and get him back on.
Okay.
And just to plug what's coming up next week.
Sure.
So on the 28th, we're going to have the CEO from Spreaker on the show.
Oh, that'd
so
be good.
He's going to talk about, and Todd, I haven't really talked to you about this too much, but he'd like to come on and talk about, obviously, Spreaker, talk about the whole Twitter bombing.
Oh,
thing.
Oh, really?
It's been an issue for Spreaker as well. So I think he's really passionate about trying to drive some awareness to this because he thinks it's a big issue in the podcasting space right now that needs to be some attention needs to be brought to it.
Well, I can say we've dealt with it. I'll put it that way.
Well, and that's part of what I think would be important to share is how to deal with it.
Yeah. The measurement people have had to deal with it. And there's, I'll just say we've had to deal with it.
You know what? So is that a touchy subject?
No, No, but I really don't want to talk about how we dealt with it because
it's a it's kind of like a warfare thing. You're trying to don't want to share the strategy too much,
right? Because you know they'll adjust, and you know we know they're going to adjust anyway. But the problem is the people that are doing it are not using necessarily measurement systems that how should I say it can be trusted.
Yeah.
You know, they're using their own calculations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And making bold statements about it. So it'd be good. We could have him on and talk about that.
Yeah.
So, but the funny thing is it doesn't affect anybody's bandwidth bill.
Yeah. There you go.
Right now it's just, you know, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, so we'll get Bob Heil back on to talk about, you know, mics and that kind of stuff. And I know we probably need to dive back into a little bit more of kind of the podcast kind of equipment a little bit on this show.
Sure. And
talk about those kind of topics sometimes too. Because there's a lot of innovation that's happening on the recording side and the equipment side, which we don't. We used to talk about that stuff a lot more.
There's actually, I've got some insight and some gear being announced at NAB that I can't talk about yet, but there's going to be some exciting products coming online at some incredible price points. That's all I can say. I can't wait to share it. I'm under embargo at this point, but there's going to be some really cool products coming for media creators. I'll just leave it at that.
So is it audio focused or video focused?
I'm just going to say there's some credible stuff coming.
Okay. You can't even say if it's audio or video.
No, I don't want to be anywhere near the embargo issue. I'm just saying it's going to be great stuff for media creators.
Okay. That's all good.
Good. Yeah. And it's not stuff we're doing. It's, you know, major companies out in the space. So,
okay.
All right, well, cool. So that'll be fun having him on next week, and we can even talk to him about their app thing that they're doing for $99. And so good. It'll be fun to talk with him. How long has it been since he's been on? It's been a while, yeah?
Yeah, it's probably been maybe a year, maybe.
Yeah.
And Francesco, he actually lives in Berlin.
Yep.
So, you know, he's there with SoundCloud, as far as that's where they're based as well. So it's... If you think about it, the kind of streaming audio podcast stuff, Berlin's a pretty important city for the whole podcasting thing. I don't know if a lot of people in the space realize that, but
yeah, it is interesting. It's a foreign, you know, the foreign based companies are making more innovation than the US based companies.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I mean, a lot of those companies have, I mean, both SoundCloud and Spreaker do have a presence in the US, and so they're saying that's their primary markets, you know, the primary market that they're going after,
right?
As important, you know, to their businesses. So even though they're based over there, it's just more of a development thing or where they started.
Right. All right, Rob. Well, let's get out of here. We're gone solo long enough. Folks, if you have any questions or any comments or suggestions for guests, and if you are speaking at New Media Expo, we want to hear from you. We want to bring you guys on, and maybe we can dedicate a show where we can boom, 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 get two or three people in.
Yeah, I think
in.
It'd be great to have multiple guests on in a couple of shows we lead up to the event.
Yeah.
You know, to just give a flavor of who these people are and what they're doing. So,
but with that, we'll be back here at our regular time next Saturday and at 9 a.m. Pacific. And the clocks don't change. It doesn't matter for you. I just have to adjust my clock. But other than that, we should be back on a regular schedule here through New Media Expo. But it's been my pleasure. Rob?
Yeah, thank you.
And Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. I'm at Geek News on Twitter. Rob is at Rob Greenlee.
Yep.
And we'll see y'all next time. Everyone take care.
Okay. Bye.
Aloha.